Today, we're going to try and piece together the portrait of a political killer. We'll be using official reports and the evidence left behind to really understand how a massive 33-hour manhunt led investigators to a suspect who is just full of contradictions. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We got him. Imagine hearing that. Those were the words from Utah's Governor Spencer Cox that officially ended a tense 33-hour national manhunt. But to really get how investigators got their man, we have to rewind back to the moment the search began. Okay, so the scene is Utah Valley University on September 10th, 2025. The founder of Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk, he's there speaking at a campus event when he was shot and killed. Right away, this was not treated as just some random act of violence. From the very beginning, officials framed it in a much more specific and frankly chilling way.
They called it a political assassination. Now that one phrase completely changed everything. It launched one of the most intense investigations we've seen in a long time, because it implied the motive here was ideological. The killer wasn't just targeting a man, but the entire political movement he represented.
So, you've got the killer on the loose, and the entire state, well, it goes on high alert. For the next 33 hours, the public was absolutely gripped by this search, with everyone wondering who was responsible and if they might strike again.
The investigation moved at an absolutely blistering pace. Think about it. On September 10th, the shooting happens. By that same evening, the FBI has already released photos of the suspect to the public. The response is just immediate and massive, which leads directly to the suspect's capture late the very next day.
And when I say the public response was massive, I'm not kidding. In just over a day, law enforcement was flooded with more than 7,000 tips. But the one single tip that broke the case wide open, it came from a source absolutely no one expected.
You know, in the end, it wasn't some stranger's anonymous tip or a high-tech surveillance operation that led to the arrest. Nope. It was a single agonizing phone call that changed absolutely everything.
The breakthrough came from inside the suspect's own family. His father saw those FBI photos on the news and recognized his 22-year-old son, Tyler Robinson. He pleaded with him to surrender. And then he made what must have been an incredibly difficult call to a family friend, a youth pastor who also happened to be a U.S. Marshal. That officer relayed the information, and just like that, the manhunt was over.
Governor Cox even publicly thanked the family, acknowledging the immense gravity of their decision. They did the right thing, he said. They turned in their own son. So with the who and the how of the capture solved, the focus immediately shifted to a much deeper, more complicated question. Who is Tyler Robinson?
As investigators and reporters started digging into his life, the portrait of this young man that began to emerge was just deeply contradictory. It was like a puzzle of someone living two completely different lives.
And this right here is the central puzzle. On one side, you have his neighbors. They described him as a good kid, quiet, reserved, someone from a loving family. But then you look at what he's accused of, and it paints the picture of a political assassin who meticulously planned a public execution. I mean, how do you even begin to reconcile those two images?
Adding another layer to the whole mystery is this number, 34. That was Tyler Robinson's score on the ACT. Now, to put that in perspective, that score places him in the 99th percentile nationwide. It really lends weight to what his own mother wrote about him in a 2020 social media post where she proudly called him a genius.
The basic facts of his life, well, they seem pretty straightforward. He was 22, lived at home with his family, and he was studying to be an electrician at a technical college. He'd also done one semester at Utah State, and social media posts show he had hunting experience from a young age. But when it came to his political profile, that was a lot less clear.
So, you might think he was deeply political, right? Well, according to voter records, Robinson had no party affiliation and was even listed as an inactive voter. That means he hadn't even bothered to vote in the last two major elections. On paper, he looks completely disengaged from the whole political process.
But, and this is a big but, his home environment was politically active and in the opposite direction. Both of his parents are registered Republicans. His father's social media even had pro-Trump content on it. This just deepens the mystery around what his own motivations could possibly be.
Okay, now we get to what are probably the most revealing and definitely the most bizarre clues in this entire case, the ones the killer actually left behind, literally engraved into the shell casings found at the crime scene.
So, the first casing seemed to offer a really clear motive.
It read, quote, "Hey, fascist, catch." That seems like a direct, politically charged message aimed squarely at a conservative figure. Pretty open and shut, right?
Then, the second casing seemed to reinforce that same theme. It had lyrics from Bella Ciao, which is a famous Italian anti-fascist anthem from World War II. So at this point, the motive seems to be solidifying around a far-left ideology. But then came the third casing. The third message was just completely jarring. It said, "If you read this, you are gay, LMAO." Yeah, LMAO. The tone just whips from serious political rhetoric to this juvenile, nonsensical internet humor. Was it some kind of misdirection, a private joke? It completely throws the whole narrative of a purely ideological killer into question.
And the weapon itself, an older Mauser bolt-action rifle, also connects back to Robinson. His roommate actually showed investigators messages where Tyler had mentioned needing to get a unique rifle, even talking about a scope and engraving bullets.
So law enforcement had their man, they had the weapon, and they had this collection of deeply, deeply confusing clues. But all of it just led back to one central, unanswered question.
The huge problem for investigators is just the sheer number of contradictions. I mean, on one hand, Robinson allegedly told a family member he disliked Kirk's hateful views, and those casings screamed anti-fascism. But on the other hand, he came from a Republican home, his classmates said they never heard him talk politics, and the evidence is tainted with this bizarre humor. It just doesn't add up.
So officials know what happened on September 10th. They know who they believe is responsible. But the search for a coherent motive, the answer to that simple question, why, that remains the most elusive part of this whole tragedy.
So was he a quiet genius who got radicalized in private, a deeply disturbed individual just using politics as a cover, or something else entirely? The evidence creates this portrait of contradictions, leaving us all with that one powerful, unanswered question, why?